So I've been watching Trigger Point this recently.
That's not what we're talking about today, is it?
But no.
Go on. All
right. Trigger Point. It's like ITV's attempt at Line of Duty.
Oh, yeah. Oh, what's her name?
Kate. Oh, no, that's her name in Line of Duty.
Line of Duty. Oh, no. Yeah, she's from Nottingham.
Is she?
Yeah, they've got a tram named after her.
Really?
Yeah. In Nottingham, they name the tram line, like all the different trams after, like, people. Yeah, you know, yeah. Significant.
So Maisie Williams got one.
Maisie Williams isn't from Nottingham.
Is she not?
You're thinking of
Ramsey.
Bella Ramsey. Yeah, you're thinking of Bella Ramsey, who, yeah, she is from Nottingham. She doesn't have a tram named after her, but my mate did once see her on a tram.
I mean, if anyone, she should definitely get a tram.
Well, yeah, if this lady whose name we've forgotten can get a tram, then why can't Bella Ramsey?
Yeah, well, Trigger Point, it's about a bomb squad, and, like, I don't think there's that many bomb risks going on in London. As many as Trigger Point. Yeah. It's like 3 an episode.
But I suppose there has to be, otherwise it wouldn't be much of a plot.
It does one good thing. The tension is good, but the rest of it, casting, dialogue, nothing makes sense. Throw in some extremists and you've got yourself a TV set. It's really, really poor.
So why are you sticking with it if you don't like it?
Because I'm becoming so... We're doing these... you know, these episodes and these blogs, I'm becoming so critical of everything, I'll just have nothing left to watch.
I mean, surely you're not the problem, though, you know? Like, if you don't enjoy it, like, don't stick with it. Like, you can't sit there watching something and be like, this is terrible, but I'm too much of a critic, so, like I'm just wrong.
But so many things annoy me that I just think, just keep watching. Because I can appreciate some car crash TV. I think Trigger Point is car crash-like.
Fair enough.
And it, you know, the tension that it delivers every episode is what people, I think, want.
Yeah, I suppose.
In a sense. Especially on, like, you know, let's say a Wednesday evening.
It's a reproduction of, you know, they're trying to call back some success of Line of Duty, aren't they?
Yeah. But it's ITV's version.
It's Vicky McClure. Well.
That's it.
By the way, Vicky McClure has a tram named after her in Nottingham. And she's, of course, LOL in This Is England.
So there's lots of references to This Is England. This Is of England? This Is England. I've still not seen it.
You haven't seen it. You would love it. You'd really love it.
I think I would, yeah. But Trigger Point is not the episode we're talking about today. We are talking about The Gentleman.
The Gentleman, Guy Ritchie.
Which has only just been replaced as the number one show.
And it is
Netflix's number one show so far this year in terms of viewership, and I completely understand why.
Mm.
Initial thoughts on The Gentleman? Have you seen the film?
Yes, I have.
Initial thoughts on the series?
I really liked it. It's funny, this movie, and I mean the movie originally, is the reason, kind of the initial reason, the inciting incident, if you like, in my falling out with Scorsese. Yeah, this is where it all began for me, because The Gentleman and The Irishman dropped around the same time.
Mm.
And I think they both, like, skipped the cinema, they went straight to streaming platforms. The Irishman was on Netflix, wasn't it?
Definitely.
And I got them mixed up, you know, similar titles, The Gentleman, The Irishman, both gangster movies. I was like, all right, well, this just, you know, it's like having two thick novels to read and they're a similar, what am I about? Do you know what I mean? It just, because they came out together, it felt like a chore to watch them. I wasn't looking forward to it. So I watched The Gentleman and I was like, oh, wow. This is not what I expected at all. Like, this is more Guy Ritchie than Guy Ritchie's arguably ever been, like, since Snatch. Like, this is amazing. And I really enjoyed it.
Snatch is a great
movie. Absolutely. And it's, you know, the sort of the ensemble cast, the wits, the kind of irreverent, like, storytelling, like, the kind of way it's like a bunch of short stories chucked together. I love it. It's like reading a hard-boiled detective, like, novel.
Mm.
But, like, with just this dash of the sort of bizarre, like,
yeah.
It's just great, like, the way, I mean, they're obviously completely unbelievable, but, like, they're really enjoyable Guy Ritchie movies. They're genuinely really good. It's really, really good storytelling. And then I watched The Irishman straight afterwards, thinking, oh, that was great. I can't wait for this Scorsese drop as well. And oh my God, was it boring. And I think part of the reason that I was so bored was that it was such a come down after watching The Gentleman. You know, and you got some amazing performances in The Gentleman. And it's so like big and energetic and quick. And then The Irishman is so slow and so dry.
I didn't
probably
mind.
Probably more arty in the eyes of some highbrow critic, but yeah. Ultimately, nah.
I didn't mind The Irishman. I actually watched it first New Year's during the pandemic.
Fair.
I sat and watched The Irishman, so it must have been December 2020.
Right.
We had nothing else to do, so the 3.5 hours didn't really matter to me too much.
But yeah, I think I was kind of, you know, this dropped on Netflix, I was kind of a little bit apprehensive because I was like, doesn't that share a title with that Guy Ritchie movie? And I started watching it and I was like, oh, it is the Guy Ritchie movie, but it's a series. And I just absolutely loved it. I was like, you know, well, I remember finishing The Gentleman and genuinely wanting more and thinking like, oh, I can't wait for the next Guy Ritchie drop. And I'm really excited to watch this Scorsese movie, you know, like it got me kind of like in the mood for that genre and that. And so, you know, the fact that he's just gifted us with a whole season of it, like more essentially, it is great. And incredibly, it holds up in terms of quality. It's not quite as good as the movie. Obviously, you haven't got like Matthew McConaughey and stuff like that. And like, but it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, it's really good. What did you think?
So I was probably even more apprehensive because when I saw the lead cast member being the tour rep from the Inbetweeners movie. I was absolutely terrified at the potential quality of this show. But, you know, pleasantly surprised, Theo James actually was probably the most impressive character, you know, cast member in the show. But I mean, I was full of worry when I saw him as the main guy, you know.
It's incredible. He's been in a ton of stuff. He was four in the Divergent series, which was absolutely terrible.
I completely forgot
but
about
like,
that.
But part of the reason, you know, I didn't really like the books, but or the ones that I read. But part of the reason that I couldn't get behind that at all was actually exactly what you've just said. Like, I could not stop seeing Theo James as the tour rep from the Inbetweeners. It's such an unfortunate way of starting a career. Like, it'd be like if Simon Bird was in this role, you know what I mean? It's almost like, unfortunately, it's almost the same thing. Like, you just can't take him seriously because of that. But no, I agree. He was really impressive. Really cool.
So I thought this was, like, almost nowhere near as good as the film, but I actually hold the film in extremely high regard. I had so much fun. I have so much fun every time I watch that film. I wasn't necessarily expecting this to come close. I actually kind of put this as like Netflix's version of Brassic, whereas that's the way it felt like to me. It was fun, you know.
It's
every episode
reverent,
something different happened, but you know, I think it just has a couple of flaws that I can get over, but I think at least, you know, differentiate it from the film.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I mean, you do sort of have to see it as a different entity, don't you, to an extent. One major criticism I have, like, story-wise, straight off the bat, is what happened to Matthew Pearce? Where did he go between the movie and the TV series? I understand, obviously, logistically, you know, you can't get Matthew McConaughey back, like, but what happened to his character? Because Susie Glass, you know, is in charge of his empire because her father Bobby Glass is in prison. Now, I genuinely, you know, first episode and a half before you get Bobby Glass show up, I had forgotten McConaughey's character's name, so I just thought, oh, that's Bobby Glass, and Susie's just his son, his daughter, and has taken over the empire. And I was like, it's brilliant, she's brilliantly cast because she looks just like, you know, the daughter, I keep really calling her the son, the daughter of Matthew McConaughey and his wife in the movie,
yeah,
you know. And I was like, she's perfectly cast. only to then find out that Matthew McConaughey didn't play Bobby Glass. He played Michael Pierce.
Yeah, it seemed to me as if this was completely the same story, but just with some different characters.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I guess, you know, creative freedom and all that. Like, it's just a fun retelling of...
From the Lord's perspective as well.
Yeah, but I guess, you know, because I really liked that it was from the Lord's perspective. You know, one of these guys whose land is being occupied by this, you know, massive, like, weed grow and, like, this drug dealing empire. It was a really cool concept introduced in the movie.
Mm.
So I really liked that it was obviously being told from a different perspective. The son of one of the lords, you know, inheriting the land when he didn't really, you know, want it or even stand to inherit it necessarily.
Yeah.
And then suddenly he's discovered that actually he's now responsible and dragged into this, like, criminal drug dealing network. Really cool new angle to look at this story from. So why omit Michael Pearson and replace him with Bobby Glass? I mean, I do understand, you know, you want to get Ray Winstone into a show like this because he's fantastic. He suits Guy Ritchie down to a T, and obviously he's like that classic gangster. Have you seen Sexy Beast?
I haven't.
Absolutely incredible movie about literally it might as well be Bobby Glass, you know. It's exactly like it's Ray Winstone playing the same character, but he's retired and he's moved to like Marbella or something. I don't know, like he's moved to some like villa in Spain. He just wants nothing to do with it, and obviously a guy from his past comes for dinner, you know, and it all unravels. And it's absolutely brilliant, like really subverts the genre. But other than getting Ray Winstone into the show, you know, I don't really understand why Michael Pearson was replaced. I think it would have been quite cool if Susie Glass was Susie Pearson and they just kept her moving.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things there. For me, this series is too close to the film anyway, because those comparisons that you're trying to make, I feel like this series only being 4 years later actually just allows that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if there's enough time between the two, that we don't even, that doesn't even need to be an issue.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here going, this is too soon. Bring this out in bring this out in 10 years. Well, we've maybe forgotten, but
nah.
You know, you made a point about, you know, these gangster movies coming out, and maybe the appetite from audiences is that's what they want right now.
Well, yeah, I don't necessarily think it's gangster movies though, which is Guy Ritchie, isn't it? Like, you know,
yeah.
He's going to capitalize off the buzz of The Gentleman that was a few years ago. I think if you leave it too much longer, people forgetting has an adverse effect. It's not like, oh yeah, you remember that? Like, it's not the Harry Potter series getting remade, you know.
Mm.
It's like a series, it's, you know, it's a sequel in a way.
Yeah.
Given it a couple of years. When did the first one come out? Like 2019?
Gentleman came out 2019, yeah, the film.
So it's been what, 5 years? Fair enough. That's an adequate amount of time.
My main criticism, we'll quickly talk about viewer criticism because it's very rudimentary.
Okay.
I'm going to talk about my main criticism because I think that might take some time. The big viewer criticism was that the viewers wanted a romance at the end between Susie Glass and
Edward Horniman, of course, the, you know, Lord.
But like, why? I don't really understand why that would be necessary. They pretty much hated each other towards the end.
Because
it
got teased, and of course the whole, like, you know, rivals becoming, you know, the will they won't they relationship is there. The whole kind of,
do
like,
you think?
Yeah, the whole tense friendship versus rivalry, you know, like. Yeah, it was teased throughout, 100%. And I'm not going to lie, I think it'll be coming. I think we'll definitely get another season because it's been strongly hinted at in the end when, of course, they buy a share of the business from Bobby Glass together.
Yeah.
It's coming.
Yeah,
it's
sure.
Coming.
My criticism is actually on Kaya Scodelario.
Right.
Who played Susie Glass.
Yeah. Who, of course, is... Effie from Skins. That's all you'll ever see her as, unfortunately.
So I found the role quite jarring.
Mm-hmm.
British common gangster.
Mm.
I come to, is this bad writing or is this bad acting? It's usually a combination of the two.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like it. I thought Jimmy was quite poor as well, the character, who's the manager of the weed firm underneath. He grew on me. Susie Glass never grew on me. I felt she was, it was a very basic, on the surface level character that didn't really have anything, any depth to the character.
But I mean, that's Guy Ritchie though. You're not looking.
But I do care about Guy, you know, Charlie Hunnam. I cared about his character. You know, I care about,
because you liked it. He's not exactly like
so
three-dimensional and, you know, nuanced.
But
though,
I think
he?
The problem here is female gangsters.
Oh. Oh God, right. Okay.
Or the portrayal of female gangsters.
Go on.
I mean, I guess as it will probably be relatively factual that there aren't too many female gangsters at the head of families historically. You know, it's a male dominated thing.
Okay.
In general.
Okay. I'll,
I think that's fair enough to say.
I'll cop to it.
So I picked out three depictions of good female gangster characters. The only three that I can come up with.
Gonna...
And maybe you can bring me a few. Of female gangsters that I think have been portrayed well, uh-huh. have been acted well, have been really solid, that I've bought into.
Okay.
I've got Polly Shelby.
Okay. Can I guess one?
But I've got Jack from Top Boy. And what's the one I forgot?
Griselda Blanco.
No, Snoop. I forgot Snoop.
Snoop.
I forgot.
Oh my
Snoop.
God!
But
well,
Snoop's
yeah, I didn't
the
think
best
you,
one.
I didn't think you were gonna.
So,
yeah, okay.
So I've got the for me the best three: Polly Shelby, Jack from Top Boy, and Snoop. Are you bringing Griselda to the table as a good portrayal of?
I haven't actually seen Griselda. You have.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I didn't
yeah.
actually get through it. So I'm not going to touch it.
Female gangsters.
No.
Have you
but
got any
for me? The question, you know, you're talking in fiction, aren't you? You're not talking about
yeah.
historically.
Yeah, yeah.
Because in history, of course, there's hundreds.
Yeah, yeah.
But in fiction, I think the three that you've picked out are really good choices. I would agree that they're all excellently written and acted and just portrayed. Like, they're so believable. Yeah, like, three really strong characters there. They're all very different, though.
I just felt I had to come with alternatives because... I'm saying this is a bad female gangster. I wanted to like add some balance to like,
okay.
I don't think they're all bad. I think Polly Shelby's great. I think Jack's yeah. great. And I think Snoop's great. All three of them are amazing.
But I don't think you can compare the three of them to each other.
No.
Let
no,
alone
no.
to Susie Glass and Kayla Scodelario. And,
I just know it can be done well. I just don't think Susie Glass was done well.
I don't think she was done badly. I liked the sort of the female mob character she was going for. I mean, it wasn't written badly necessarily. I kind of know what you mean. Maybe we're sort of saying that the acting wasn't great. Maybe we're sending for Kaya here. Unfortunately, I sort of still just have that imprint of Effie forever.
Yeah. I mean, Polly, Jack and Snoop, there's a lot of grit to them. And again, a lot of depth to those characters, so maybe it's just lack of depth, which you wouldn't get from this necessarily.
Exactly. I mean, part of the reason I say that you can't compare the three to each other is that they're in three very different shows, of course, and of course the tone of those three shows, especially in comparison to the tone of The Gentlemen, you know, they're very different from each other.
Yeah.
You're not going for the gritty, realistic kind of vibe that like Felicia Pearson's going for with Snoop. I mean, she's not even acting. Like, she's not. Like, her name is Felicia Snoop Pearson. Like, she's playing herself in The Wire.
Yeah.
And her story is like, just as awful and crazy wild as Snoop's in The Wire is. Like, she's not acting at all, unfortunately. Whereas, of course, Polly Shelby and Jack totally are. But, again, you know, they're gritty, realistic portrayals of characters or they want to be, and this is a Guy Ritchie movie. He's not going for super nuanced characters who he like, you know, he's going for, you know, almost like the stock character everywhere. He's going for the butler, the you know, the lord, the gentleman, the gangster, the villain, whatever, you know. And he does it really well because that's what it is. He's just getting these pieces and he's moving them around. He's telling a good story. That's his focus, and that's what I really like about Guy Ritchie, that the focus is the plot, is the moving pieces, rather than it is like the story of one man and a you know an intrinsic character study that's trying to say something about society. There's not really anything deep about a Guy Ritchie movie. It's inherently just entertaining.
Yeah. Oh, no, I agree. And it's, I guess it's just something I look for, because you do always, you're very consistent, you look for plot over anything and good story over anything.
I would say so, probably.
You know...
let's be entertained, I think.
A bad character can derail a whole thing for me, a whole show for me. Yeah. And that's maybe, you know, that's maybe my bag. But, you know, think of...
Yellow Jackets. I knew you were going to say this. Yeah.
A bad character can make me angry watching something. Yeah. So, but I don't think Susie Glass is bad. I just think it's almost unfortunate that, you know, all the other characters seem to be fitting into their role so well. You know, the destructive brother, he's amazing.
Daniel Ings, Freddy, absolutely, brilliant.
I actually think the first episode was like a great start to his. I think the first episode was the best episode.
Yeah,
it was really intense. You know, the chicken dance thing.
Was that in the first episode? Yeah. The very first one?
Yeah.
Wow.
The first episode was absolutely like flawless.
Yeah.
And the Will scene.
I mean, that's a bit like tired and overused, but I guess because, you know, it made me think of every Will scene that goes wrong always makes me think of the Knives Out. Knives I almost Out. Said The Subtle Knife, the Philip Pullman novel, Knives Out, which of course is the whole thing's based on, you know, a Will not going the way the family wants it to. But I think, you know, again, Guy Ritchie uses these type concepts really well.
Mm, yeah. It almost doesn't take them seriously, themselves too seriously.
And Daniel Ng's got an opportunity to totally overreact as Freddy and like really, you know, it was a really kind of like introduction to, okay, I'm going to be overacting for the whole season. And he absolutely is, and it's great. And then of course he puts a chicken suit on and shoots the head off a Scouse gangster, like what, 40 minutes later. it's crazy. And I want to talk about Daniel Ings actually, because he's incredible. What have you seen in him before? Because I only know him from two things.
I know his face, but I can't remember. Go on.
Lovesick, which is his main role. He plays, I think he plays a guy called Lucas, I think. I can't remember his character's name, but there's only like three major characters, and he's the same guy, you know, he's the kind of best friend comedy guy. But of course, in Lovesick, you know, he's fully explored. It's a different, very, very different TV series. The other thing is Sex Education. He's the leather-clad motorcyclist that gets Jean Milburn pregnant.
Okay.
In all three... The Gentleman, Sex Education, and Lovesick, he's the same character. He's like that Simon Bird type,
right, yeah,
who can kind of only do
he's
one
good,
thing.
Though.
You don't like Simon Bird.
I don't even think he does his one thing very well.
Fair enough.
I mean, in the Inbetweeners, you know, it's the only one that I'd let slide. You know, Friday Night Dinner.
He's the same.
Can't stand
isn't
him
he?
In that. What else has he been in?
He was in Chickens, we talked about last week.
Chickens, I haven't seen Chickens, but...
Yeah,
Simon Bird for me is just not the one. And even in between is like, I tolerate him.
Sorry, like critiquing the Inbetweeners. I mean, yeah, right. Daniel Ings, though, I would say he kind of does the one role. He does it really, really well. I'm not that keen on the idea of like seeing him diversify. I'm cool with him doing, like, staying in his lane and doing what he does because he's so entertaining. And he smashes this role. He's perfect for it. Like, the slightly darker twist on the guy he was playing in Lovesick, because now obviously he's involved in gangs and he's like this kind of... Oh, it's brilliant.
Yeah, and this will be seasons to come, I think. I think, you know, it's done very well for Netflix and, the story has so many arms and legs. Like, this can get really, really go. I think, you know, this could be, I think this will be one of those that becomes massively overdone and there's too many series, but this will turn into you, I think.
I don't know if it'll be quite that bad, but I can see Guy Ritchie like running away with this a bit.
It will definitely be better than you, but I can see 4, 5, 6 seasons of this. And if Guy Ritchie stays involved with the whole thing, then I can get behind it.
I think he will.
Like Brassic, it might be one in 3 seasons' time that we no longer need to be reviewing.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, I did notice that Guy Ritchie's not actually at, well, he's at the helm of this, but he's not directed every episode.
Okay.
He's it's another one of those like Masters of Air where like there's like a handful of different directors and even more writers on this. It's a big project. So yeah, I think you're right. I think we are to expect more. Going back to the acting briefly though, of course, a bunch of big names. It's kind of an ensemble cast as Guy Ritchie always does. But joining Daniel Ings from the Lovesick cast is Joshua Maguire, who played he plays Angus in Lovesick. He plays Stinky Pete in Gentleman. And of course, he's the same. He's also from Lovesick, but his character's completely different, and he's in a bunch of stuff. And I think Joshua Maguire is brilliant. I really, really like him, and I was gassed to see him in this because it's a completely like new vibe for him being a villain.
And there'll be more of him as well.
100%. And also, of course, Giancarlo Esposito from Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
And of course, from tons of other
he's
stuff since
he's
there. Yeah.
Mandalorian as well.
He's in all kinds of stuff. I mean, he's another one you could kind of accuse of just playing one role. He's always the villain. He's always the gentleman villain.
Yeah.
The distinguished villain.
Well, I think, does he pigeonhole him? You know, people get pigeonholed. And maybe, is he a victim of that?
I guess to an extent. But he's just lent into what he's good at, isn't he? He's typecast, he's not pigeonholed.
Well, with Jason Momoa, we've seen what happens when you do try and branch out and get it completely wrong.
What, and play a villain too quickly? Try and go for a Joker.
Go from Aquaman to a villain in Fast and Furious, you know, like...
I mean, they're not that dissimilar. Trash and trash, right?
Well...
Moving on.
So the general consensus for the gentleman from critics is that, yeah, it's nothing special, but it's entertaining. And I think it's quite a little harsh, but it almost is a carbon copy of the film. So it doesn't necessarily do anything additional. And it is really, really fun.
Yeah, and I'd be excited to see more of this, to be honest. Especially if, you know, Guy Ritchie brings back another ensemble cast. Of course, we had Vinnie Jones in this playing, you know, yet another lovable British gangster type, you know, heart in the right place, willing to use his double barrel at any point.
I was actually shocked to see him because he's got a series at the minute called Vinnie Jones in the Country. And it's just that it's basically Clarkson's Farm, I think, but just with a shotgun.
Amazing.
So I was actually really surprised to see him acting again, but he was really good.
Yeah, he always is. And he's Guy Ritchie, like, you know, you can't have one without the other.
And Vinnie Jones is one where he's surprisingly good to me. He was a footballer.
Yeah.
So he's surprisingly really good at what he does. But maybe it shouldn't be a surprise.
But he was, you know, picked up by Guy Ritchie basically straight out of his football career, wasn't it? Because he was known for fouling and being this like hard man England.
He did this really.
He came right out of that hard man era.
Yeah,
didn't he?
He did this
Ross
really,
Kemp and him.
Really, really bad film about a prison football team with, I think, Danny Dyer, and it was, I can't remember what it was called, but it was very poor, and it was like, you know. Actively every game they were trying to break each other's legs and stuff like that. It was, you know, extremely violent. I'll have to try and think of the name of that. And it also reminded me of a PlayStation 2 game.
Yeah.
Where you were, the point was to get red cards.
What game is that?
Surprisingly, it was called Red Card.
Amazing.
there was a mode where you could be dolphins. I don't know why your team of dolphins just two. Well, I was about to say two footing people, but I guess two finning people. But yeah, Vinnie Jones. I've definitely seen him in. He reminds me of like the football factory, the hard man.
Yeah, yeah. Because he came completely out of that area, didn't he? Like, I guess he kind of symbolised like that generation. You know, the sort of the hard man, the football hooliganism, yeah. That, like terrifying society in like 80s
Green print. Street and things like that.
Yeah.
Did you ever watch Danny Dyer's Football Factories?
No.
Or like Danny Dyer's Hardest Men in Britain kind of thing?
Absolutely not. I watched a couple of the Ross Kemp things. And Ross Kemp makes me laugh as well because like he's not hard at all. He was like privately educated. But then you see him, you know, when he's doing these like, he's going off to crazy parts of the world and putting himself in the most dangerous situations and like grabbing the butts of guns as people put them in his face. Like, dude was nuts. Like, Ross Kemp was tough. Like, crazy.
Product of being bald, I guess. Phil Mitchell. And
yeah, that's what it is. Like, yeah.
Shave your head and become a hard man.
Get in the pub, yeah, literally.
Well, we've swiveled on a tangent, but
No, well, there you go. I guess Guy Ritchie kind of capitalised on that era, didn't he? Because he plucked...
Statham as well.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And he plucked Vinny straight out of that football hooligan world and stuck him on the screen, and people loved it. You know, and I guess it kind of started that whole wave of like obsession with, you know, football hooliganism and the British hard man as a character, as a trope in cinema and in TV. And we're still seeing it now, you know, still doing it now. We did it with The Gentleman. And
I'd like to see Gary Oldman in one of these.
I mean, yeah, they had Hugh Grant, so why not?